Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's day two of Wimbledon, and I shan't name any names, but somebody in the room with me now has uttered the words, "What is Nick Kyrgios's route to the final?"
Well, the first thing it'll require is somehow to extricate himself from a fifth set held overnight against Hugo Humbert.
His route to the second round is not yet sealed, far from it, and yet here we are, swept up once again.
I mean, Matt, I'd have thought you'd have known better by now.
I know it's not the biggest story of the day, Nick Kyrgios not even completing a match against Hugo Humbert, but it is the one freshest in our minds because we're recording this at close to midnight, 11:30 UK time, because we've been watching not a night session. I should stress, Wimbledon don't have night sessions, but we have been watching tennis being played at Wimbledon under the roof, under the lights, by Nick Kyrgios and Hugo Humbert until just minutes ago.
I've missed Nick Kyrgios. I've not really thought about him through the tennis we've had since the Australian Open. And yet, when you see him play like he was playing tonight, you realise what he brings to these tournaments much I do enjoy watching
him. You mean you weren't swept up by get that vibe on Twitter whenever he tweets that? Because I don't really know what any of that means. There's something computer game based.
Reeling in those younger listeners, David, hitting all the demographics.
That's what I'm going for. You know, what is Nintendo and all that. But I think that he is a turn-off for people like me who care about tennis when he's banging on about all that lot. And then he walks out on court in a match like this and reminds me why I am still a Kyrie optimist.
The thing is, he's hard to miss because he's never reliably there. You kind of miss things that you are used to being there or can count on being there. And he has never fallen into that category because you can kind of, in that case, you could miss him while he's playing.
Yeah, perhaps miss is the wrong word. I've forgotten how much I appreciate Nick Kyrgios at his best, which I think was pretty much what we saw today.
I mean, yeah, he could be fitter, but I think sort of adjusting our expectations of Nick Kyrgios, which I think we have done in the last 2 or 3 years, this was the best of Nick Kyrgios tonight, pretty much.
I still did end up thinking, just imagine if he got to the final. by the way, Hugo Humbert's good, isn't he?
Really good.
Really good.
I like it.
And particularly good on grass, I think.
Rough draw for him coming in as the Halle champion and getting Kyrgios first
round. He's made Kyrgios have to knuckle down because he can read the Kyrgios serve. Returning it like it was a dolly serve in the early stages of the fifth set that we were just watching. They've been called off for the non-COVID related curfew, which is a bit of a throwback, isn't it? Remember when curfews weren't anything to do with the pandemic?
When they were just about the Merton Council's whims.
They were called off at 3-3 in the fifth set due to the local council curfew. and it could not have been more finely poised. Yeah, but it was. Look, there were splashes of silly shot selections and, you know, unnecessarily flashy tweeners. But mostly it was just Nick Kyrgios, as Hannah put it, being a professional tennis player, which is not what I came for.
So she left. She chose that point to stop her incredible Twitter service that had been going for a full 9 hours. Who's going to win, by the way, now from 3 games all in the fifth?
I mean, it's the irresistible force of Kyrgios, isn't it? I'm going to be unable not to say Kyrgios in okay. answer to that,
yeah,
even
same.
Though
same,
it
same,
might be silly.
Same. Yeah. Same.
Well, I have to say that because I predicted that, didn't I? Even though I kind of think Umber might win. Anyway, carry
but,
on.
I enjoy how much Kyrgios rates Umber as well. You can tell that he thinks he's good. And I think, therefore, that's perhaps one of the reasons why Kyrgios did knuckle down in this match and was really engaged and professional. I mean, for all of it. When he was serving to stay in the second set, he overplayed the drop shot. I think he hit about 4 in a row. And Umber started to read him. And then he went off a bit in the third set and got it back together in the fourth set. The stats showed that he'd hit 0 unforced errors in the fourth set and got 95% of his first serves in. It's one of the best sets of all time.
Stat machine was drunk at that point.
Yeah, ridiculous. Look, I'm using Nick Kyrgios and by extension Hugo Humbert as a procrastination tool here from having to talk about what is the biggest story of the day, and that is Serena Williams departing centre court, limping off centre court, having retired in the opening set of her first round match against Alexandra Sasnovich. She sustained what looked like an ankle injury. She came onto the court with strapping on her right thigh. And then it was a very slippery centre court, had been all day, has been all tournament. That's something we'll talk about. Andy Murray's had his say on that. And she slipped sort of what at first glance in real time looked like quite an innocuous slip, but played back, it her ankle sort of did bend in a not particularly pleasant way, and it was immediately apparent that she was significantly hampered, couldn't serve, went up to the line to serve, was clearly distressed and crying, in fact.
Really sobbing.
Really sobbing.
Openly
weeping
on the court.
And the inevitable then came. She retired from the match. The referee came out to her, John Blom came out to her and kind of sort of intercepted her on her walk towards the chair, actually. Alexandra Sasnovich gave, in the circumstances, an extraordinarily good interview on the court. Because for her, it was the first time she ever played on centre court, and of course this incredible atmosphere, all of those people in centre court thinking they're seeing Serena on the quest for 24, possibly, probably her last Wimbledon. And then it ends like that, and Alexandra Sasnovich definitely didn't want it to end like that either. And it's desperately sad. We were all quite somber for a little while after that happened, actually, and thank goodness for Nick Kyrgios and Hugo Humbert for picking us up off the floor a bit, because it was a really tough sight to see.
I think that was universal. How could you not see anybody suffering like that and all their hopes and their dreams and all the things they've worked for this tournament? And this is the one. This is the one Serena Williams was eyeballing all along, really, wasn't it? This is the one she's just won so many times and thinks that if she's on her game, that she has the upper hand against the field, the whole field. And I mean, she's been trying for years now to get this 24th Grand Slam title and draw level with Margaret Court. And the question marks have been growing as to whether she has a chance of doing that anywhere. But if it was going to be anywhere, it's here. And to get what? 4 games into the match, into her Wimbledon? than to have that happen. I mean, that's just rotten luck. And you could tell that she just thought the world was against her and was really struggling to take it in. She didn't do a press conference afterwards. She's left released a statement. And, I just feel terribly sorry for her.
Gosh, yeah. It's too cruel for this particular attempt at number 24 to end. I really, really, really hope that was not her last Wimbledon experience. We just don't know what the next year holds. There was a prolonged wave goodbye as she left the court, but that could have just been an in the moment thing. I just get such sadness, and I know Serena has played into this chase for 24 herself, but I just feel sad that the narrative around Serena is her not getting 24 when we know that is a ghost record and we're not at the end of her career celebrating all of her achievements. You know, it feels like she's falling short. And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't feel like that. It shouldn't be framed that way, in my opinion.
Don't think it will be in the long run.
No, I know what you mean, but I'm finding this chase for 24 really quite, I don't know, really quite traumatic in that way, because it doesn't feel like it should feel for someone so, so great.
Who would have had Venus going further than Serena in this Wimbledon? She was a ray of sunshine today, Venus Williams, and her opening round win, which you commentated on, David.
I did.
To the world.
To the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it was against Mihaila Buzanescu, and I thought it'd be a good match. I thought on paper they'd had a three-setter in their one previous meeting before and there were two tie-breaks in that. But almost from ball one, you just got the sense there's so little between these two. As a 41-year-old, Venus Williams, and a 33-year-old, I didn't realise Mihaila Buzanescu was 33, but good player, left-handed player, and they just duked it out. But again, some of these stories, some of these players with these histories, just they're more than tennis players, and you can see them fighting the years out there in front of your eyes, and the crowd just willing them to do so and to overcome these dual adversaries of opponent and age. And you know, people often say, oh, I wish you'd stop talking about how old she is, but it's crazy what she's doing on paper. 41, this was her 23rd Wimbledon. And it's not been going very well recently for Venus Williams. She's ranked outside the world's top 100.
We tuned into that match this morning here at Tennis Podcast Towers because we love Venus and because you were commentating on it. But I think we both did so with a little bit of trepidation, because there have been some tough Venus Williams watches recently where she's looked just so much a shadow of herself. It's still completely admirable that she's out there, and I completely respect that she is, but just as from a fan perspective, it's tough to watch someone so great not be so far from great. But like, I'm not saying she was great today, but it was a good old watch, and she was great in the press conference afterwards.
She overcame the two adversaries today, and they were significant. And I mean, she starts off matches, and even after all these matches I've seen of hers, she rolls her arm over for the first two service games, and the ball is barely going above 70 miles an hour on the serve. And I always, when that's happening, think, oh no, she's injured. She's hurt her shoulder. She's hurt her back. And it just seems to be some sort of warm-up routine. It's like an extended warm-up, because suddenly she decides, right then, and 113 miles an hour goes down, and she still has the same firepower. The movement isn't what it was. I don't think that's a surprise, really, but she was good enough. And the thing is, she doesn't go away. I mean, this was well over 2 hours. Her mum Orosin and her sister were sitting side by side in the player box and just going through it with her. You know, the amount of effort that is being put in. And she got the win. And the look on her face afterwards, it was all worthwhile. It was kind of the total opposite.
It was Andy Murray-esque, wasn't it?
And it was total opposite of what we saw with Serena later. You know, that you saw the two extremes of the emotions with the two sisters today.
It's been a lot of emotions today. Yeah. I've felt a lot of things.
And the press conference that you referenced as well, Venus can sometimes look as though she really, you can tell she's just world weary with press conferences so often. And yet this one, she embraced. And she was good fun and she was insightful, everything.
Yeah, she had that glint in her eye. The same glint from that clip that did the rounds about, what did she say?
She said, I don't know what's going on with the ATP. I don't have the bandwidth. Wishing them luck.
So good. Yeah, she was asked about being put on court three, which I, not news, think is a travesty.
Just an annual event now.
It's just an annual, yeah, it's an annual event. And she said, look, no, I wasn't disappointed. I never think of it like that. I go out there, I do my thing, but I do appreciate your sentiment. Because the chap asking the question, I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, said, you know, unbelievable court assignment, like you're a five-time champion, blah. And she said, nah, I wasn't disappointed, but I do like that you were disappointed for me. Yeah, she was great. And
lovely answer about Ons Jabeur,
who she
plays next. I mean, she knows a trailblazer when she sees one.
Absolutely. She spoke brilliantly about Ons Jabeur, you know, not just trotting out the sort of stuff that everyone knows, the headlines about Ons Jabeur, first Arab woman to do this, etc., etc. She, you know, she knew a lot about Ons Jabeur and the significance of her, and talked about what a trailblazer should be, not just for Arab women, not just for women, not, you know, just everybody should be respecting Ons Jabeur and seeing her as an inspiration. And it was, yeah, it was just lovely.
She'll enjoy the challenge, I would think, as well. I mean, she might not enjoy it when she gets out there, the way Ons Jabeur's playing at the moment. I mean, she can make life very difficult for anybody. But I think if Venus Williams can provide a decent level in that match, it could be a real belter, because they're so different. I mean, you've got power against, I guess, guile and a box of tricks, really. But two players who just really thrive on the surface.
And I'm so relieved that match has been scheduled for court number one. But I mean, it's a great match. It would be an absolute travesty for it to be elsewhere. But Venus Williams is likely to lose that match, I think. And there's a good chance that will be her last ever Wimbledon match. There is every chance this is her last Wimbledon, and I don't want her last Wimbledon match to be on court number three or anywhere other than centre or number one court. So I was very relieved when that scheduling came out. Now, speaking of players about whom we speculate as to whether it will be their last ever Wimbledon, Roger Federer, would it be fair to say, Matt, who was on centre court watching live in colour today, would it be fair to say he dodged a bullet with the very sad, unfortunate retirement of Adrian Mannarino?
Definitely fair to say that. And that was Federer's assessment in a very analytical post-match interview he gave on the court, where he really went into some depth about what he thought had happened in that match. He knew that Mannarino was playing better than him today in the real meat of that match. I think Federer started it fairly well, and then went off midway through on his forehand in particular. He got he got a terrible case of the shanks on the forehand, and he was spraying the ball all over the court. He seemed to have no control over it. And Mannarino is such a crafty player, gives you no rhythm, no two shots the same. There's no ability to build points like you would against other players. And I thought Federer was in big, big trouble down 2-1 because he wasn't playing well, and Mannarino was. And he didn't have the recent form for me to think, oh, well, he'll find it eventually. I was thinking, well, this might just be how Federer is playing now, and it might not be good enough. It's always transfixing to watch Federer fight, because he does it in his own way. He doesn't do it loudly like a lot of other players, which is great. I love all of that. But Federer's way of doing it is just by raising his tennis and letting his tennis bring him back into a match. And he did that at the start of the fourth set. And he had got some control when Mannarino fell over and hurt his knee. Dreadful shame for him. But I really do think a fifth set would have been very, very difficult against Mannarino. He was lucky today, Federer, and he knew it. Maybe we watched the sliding doors moment before our eyes, because who knows what he could go on to do in this tournament if he can get on a bit of a roll. But there was no guarantee he was winning this match if Mannarino had been fully fit throughout.
What do we take from it in terms of the future of Federer in this tournament? Is it sort of tough first round, understandable rust, all that matters is he made it through? Or do we say alarm bells, Roger Federer's game isn't there to beat Adrian Mannarino? That's a worry.
I would say if he's fit enough, and I think there's always a big question mark over that at the moment. If he's fit enough, I never worry about his game, because I think at any point his game can click into gear.
Well, how fit did he look?
He looked fit, yeah. I wasn't concerned that he was flagging physically. And I think Mannarino is such a particular, specific opponent. You know, I don't think there's anyone who's got the combination of being a lefty and hitting such a flat shot and knowing his way around the grass court.
And giving you nothing energy-wise. He's a drain, isn't he?
he's a vibe killer.
He is. Don't invite him to any parties.
And that's kind of what I mean about Federer's fight back. There was very little energy on the court. He had to create it all with his tennis.
And little adjustments.
Tiny little things. And, you know, some of the points he played at the start of the fourth set were really, really stirring. It was also a strange atmosphere on centre court because, you know, it's Federer. He's the king of centre court. And he should be the one commanding everybody's attention. And yet the match was on at the same time as England, Germany and the Euros. So lots of people's attention in the crowd was slightly elsewhere, and you could feel a slightly odd atmosphere. Personally, I was thinking, Federer goes two sets up, I might dip out, go and watch some of the football. So you're kind of on edge a little bit throughout the match, and it's just strange to watch Federer in that scenario where he's not totally the focus of everything. And that will change unless he clashes with England again. But, you know, I just think this was a bit of a one-off match. And if he's fit, which I believe he is, I agree with David, he can find that tennis.
The reason that the Roger Federer match, which was second on centre court, ended up clashing with England's sensational 2-0 win over Germany is that Ash Barty and Carlos Suarez Navarro, who were the first match on centre court, ended up going to three sets. And just thinking back on this now, I'm realising why I feel so emotionally wrung out, because we've already done a podcast laden with emotion, and I still think I'm about to talk about my most emotional moment of the day, which was Carlos Suarez Navarro leaving the centre court to an absolutely rapturous reception after losing in three very entertaining sets to the top seed Ash Barty, and the camera cutting to her mother in the crowd, who's basically an older blonde Carla Suarez Navarro, if you would like just, yeah, an incredibly accurate visual.
They didn't caption her. I didn't have any sound on.
Not necessary.
But I knew exactly who it was.
It was the same face with a few more wrinkles and a blonde wig on. And it was just so perfect, the emotion on her face. It was sadness and happiness in equal measure. It was sort of all humanity in one human face. It was extraordinary.
And filming on a phone.
Oh, goodness. And Wimbledon isn't it is not Carla Suarez Navarro's most successful slam. It's not somewhere that you associate with her. Grass as a surface isn't something you associate with her. But Wimbledon did this right, and it righted the wrongs of Roland Garros. And what was particularly right about it, and Matt, you should talk about this because you were there, is that I think if that had been a normal Wimbledon crowd, they wouldn't have had quite the understanding that crowd in there today did about the significance of that moment for Carla Suarez Navarro, and the significance of Carla Suarez Navarro to tennis over the past 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's quite possibly right. I was really pleasantly surprised by how everyone in the stadium recognised the moment. Because, there's no announcement at the start. there's nothing telling you that this is an incredibly important match. And yet people got it. And they got it, I think, even actually just before she left the court, when she was serving love 5 down in the final set, which, it could well have been her last Wimbledon game. There was a massive applause before she went to serve, and she won that game. Another massive applause. Barty won the match, and Barty recognised the moment as well. Mm. She let Carla Suarez Navarro have the applause. And yeah, as you say, I think tennis needed this moment, needed to give Carla Suarez Navarro this moment, because what happened at the French Open wasn't acceptable, really. Mm. This course correction needed to happen, and I'm so happy it did. I can't believe that the loveliness of that moment took place in exactly the same place as what we went on to experience on Centre Court today. It's just been an extraordinary day of emotions. It has.
By the way, Darren Cahill tweeted after that, after Ash Barty had played in this wonderful match with Carla Suarez Navarro, they got to exhibit all of their skills. Mm. And these are players with the loveliest angles and spins and flights of a tennis ball.
It's so relaxing.
Yeah.
Just to watch them.
You get to see these points unfold. You can kind of, it could go over there, it could come short. You know what the options are if you watch them enough, and they just they're exhibiting all of these things in front of you. And Ash Barty's speech was pitch perfect. She's becoming so good at moments, picking the right words and everything about her demeanor as well. She just has a lovely way about her. And Darren Cahill just provided a little sobering reminder of the fact that this isn't just Carla Suarez Navarro having a little bit of a lap of honour in her final year. He said he was on the court with her when Simona Halep was practising with Carla Suarez Navarro just three months ago in Madrid. And he said she would practise for 30 to 40 minutes and be out of breath. She just, this is a woman who has had cancer very recently, Hodgkin's lymphoma. She's been in remission. She's had chemotherapy for it. But, her condition had gone, and she wasn't prepared to just show up on a main show court, take some cheers and leave. She wanted to, a little Andy Murray-like, make sure everybody knows what she was all about. And that's what she did today.
Mm. Back through the emotional ringer. Thank you very much, David. Let's, like a bucket of ice cold water, let's go through the Court 1 results today, where it was German-tastic.
Indeed.
Alexander Zverev was a successful German.
Yeah, straight sets.
I was thinking, what's the name of for someone from Germany? German. he beat Talon Griekspoor 3 straight sets. Totally. I mean, he gone are the days when he faffs around. I mean, he did go 2 sets down to Oscar Otter in Paris, didn't he? But it feels like that habit is fading of Zverev faffing around in opening rounds of slams. Then Angelique Kerber also scored a rare winner for Germany. Yep.
You went there.
6-4, 6-3 over Nina Stojanovic. She was a breakdown in the opening set in that one, but then just got her game together. And finally on court number one, well, before the Kyrgios match was moved there, Daniil Medvedev lost the third set to Jan-Lennard Struff, but came through to win in a tiebreak fourth set, despite what some people predicted. No.
Who predicted that?
I thought Matt predicted that.
No, I predicted another incorrect.
Oh, right, sure.
There's been a few of those today.
Was it more or less
incorrect?
I think
it was Daryl predicted that.
Okay. Well, it didn't happen anyway.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Over on court number 2, Dan Evans.
Well, should we ask him?
Dan Evans beat Feliciano Lopez 7-6, 6-2, 7-5, a match that was supposed to be played yesterday. And we dialed a Dan.
Yeah, let's dial a Dan, shall we? And find out how it all went, because we reckoned it might have been a bit tense out there. So, was it?
Yeah, today was a good win. I was a little... I had practiced solid, but not great. Few things wasn't going the way I wanted them to in practice, so I come in to the match with a bit of uncertainty, which isn't ideal, but you know, practice very different to matches, so yeah, that's why I was, you know, pretty relieved when I won. And so yeah, that was why it was a good win, really. And yeah, it was a good day overall, and just found out playing court one tomorrow, so that's another big match, and really looking forward to that. So it's today was good, but now it's, you know, ready to go again tomorrow, which is a hard match and 3 out of 5 back-to-back days. So yeah, it'd be good to get going again tomorrow, and hopefully another win.
Yeah, so Dan Evans is playing against Dusan Lajovic in the next round, and I also took a chance to ask him about Andy Murray and whether he watched that, and whether we watched the old England and what it might have been like.
Yeah, watching Andy last night was not easy. It was, you know, a strange match. And then ebbed and flowed so much, and obviously being 5 up, I thought it was over, actually switched over, and then, you know, obviously was getting told it was getting tight, so then turned back on. Yeah, it was, I mean, just happy he got through it, really, and, you know, it's through. It was a strange one. Yeah, we watched the match downstairs in the players' restaurant. A lot of the English guys, and there was some Germans there as well. Zverev was there. Yeah, it was good. It was good fun. All light-hearted, and it's a nice England win.
Could barely control his glee. but it's. I mean, he actually said that in an earlier message that he was. I mean, he sounded really quite worried about the serve, and I find that quite fascinating to be in practice and not have one of your shots working, and then you've got to get out there and try and find it. I mean, that's pretty tough, but you know, he got the job done, didn't he, against a seasoned grass court player, and now really, I mean, this is a heck of an opportunity, isn't it, for Dan Evans? If you think about it, he's got Dusan Ljajovic, who would be favoured to beat, and suddenly Stefanos Tsitsipas is not in his section of the draw. I know that's further down the line, but still.
Yeah, there were two things stopping me from picking Dan Evans to reach the quarters.
Really? You would go in there?
Yeah. I mean, there were two big things.
Okay.
They were the fact that he can't get out of round one in a Grand Slam. And
yeah, that's the thing that stops me from picking Benoit Paire to reach quarters as well, you know.
And Stefanos Tsitsipas, yeah, who he's had a terrible time against. And look, I think grass would be a surface where he would be helped against Tsitsipas. But having seen them match up against each other, I couldn't possibly predict that Evans would get past him. But he's got out of round one and Tsitsipas is gone. So I'm completely with you, David. This is now a big opportunity. And of course that brings its own pressure, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I do think that that will be counterbalanced by the pressure that's relieved by just winning this match today.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there were a lot of scenarios where he didn't win this match today.
I didn't see any of the match because I was commentating at the time, but we've just watched the match point and the body language on him. I mean, he looked
so pumped,
like somebody just giving him an electric shock when he's coming to the net at the end. He was so pumped up. And he said in a dialer down a couple of days ago, didn't he, this is a proper grass court win if I can get it.
Mm.
And he could be off and running now.
Yeah, I thought he was really good today. Really, really good. And that was a tricky matchup for anyone. So, yeah, he's got Ljajovic in round two. He'll play that on court number one tomorrow. Coco Gauff won on court number two today. She beat Fran Jones 7-5, 6-4. Decent match, that one. Fran Jones really, yeah, made a match of it. But Coco Gauff just ticks off the wins these days, doesn't she? I say these days like she's been around forever. These sort of last few weeks.
There's been a shift, though.
Definitely.
I think we've spoken about that, and it doesn't feel like a blip in itself. That feels like new normal.
Definitely. Barbora Krejčíková can play on grass, I think.
Turns out.
She beat Clara Towson 6-3, 6-2 today. That was the one you predicted.
That's the badger.
Yeah, I mean, talk about an unknown quantity, Barbora Krejčíková. I mean, she could win Wimbledon.
I know.
Or very much not win Wimbledon.
Yeah, what a strange situation that the most recent Grand Slam champion, as you said, an unknown quantity. I had no idea what to expect from her, bearing in mind she'd never won a main draw WTA match on grass before. Not even just at Wimbledon, just on grass generally. WTA main draw singles. She'd never done it. This is her first one. Plus, you've got coming off the back of becoming a Grand Slam champion. They just were unknowns. And yet, I mean, I didn't see the match today, but that scoreline would suggest she's found her feet very quickly. And suddenly, she's a factor in this draw. And she's in that top section with Ash Barty. I think they would potentially meet in the fourth round, which would be a matchup I would love to watch.
Absolutely, yeah. Also on court number three, Oscar Otter and Arthur Rinderknecht. Not confident about that pronunciation. Matt's going as Rinderknecht.
I think you did all right then.
Yeah, thanks.
Because I know I butchered it and I've been corrected. So
anyway, he's out. Oscar Otter beat him. And the reason I mention that is obviously primarily to please Oscar Otter fans, but secondarily because Oscar Otter will now be the second round opponent of Andy Murray in the third match on centre court tomorrow. And I've realised this is the first time in, God, I don't know how long, that I'm expecting Andy Murray to win a tennis match.
Yeah.
It's quite different.
He's got that big unknown against him, hasn't he, of just how the body bounces back, because we've had a couple of slams, or certainly the US Open when he had that miraculous escape in the first round from two sets down and then came out flat the next round, admittedly against a very, very good player in Félix Auger-Aliassime, but you know, the body just couldn't really cope at that point. I think the adrenaline will be there from ball one. The crowd will be there, everything will be there. And as long as the body physically is okay, I don't think there'll be any flatness to him.
Yes. Was it Dan Evans, perhaps, or perhaps someone else? But I think it was Dan Evans who was talking about how much easier on the body generally grass is. And I can imagine for Murray that it's, you know, easier on his body than those hard courts at the US Open. So the Basilashvili match wasn't ridiculously physical. A day off, I think, is massive for Andy Murray, that he doesn't get held up by the schedule, and he probably won't, because his matches are going to be on centre court or court one with a roof. So I'm hopeful that we'll see another good Andy Murray performance tomorrow. But as you said, yeah, expecting him to win, that's quite a development just in a few days.
Who would he be playing in the third round?
Shapovalov,
who won 6-4 in the fifth today over Philipp Kohlschreiber. The movement was having a bad time for a couple of sets there. Because Philipp Kohlschreiber, look, I know he's 37, and I know that's not even particularly remarkable in this day and age, but usually the aging tennis players look really young for their age because they're incredible athletes, etc., etc. Philipp Kohlschreiber looks like a normal bloke, 37.
Yeah, he looks like...
He looks
a bit like me.
Quite a lot like David, yeah.
He looks... Like, not someone a 22-year-old would want to be losing to, I'd say. Anyway, he didn't. It's fine. Shapovalov's through.
How old were you when we played, Matt? What do you know?
I'm 25, so right. I think I would have been 23.
Hence why Matt didn't want to lose to me and didn't lose to me.
Pliskova beat Zidanšek. That was my prediction for the day. And I think Pliskova was... Zidanšek was 5-2 up or something in that opening set. Anyway, she completely piddled all over my what would have been a brilliant prediction. What else have we got? Hubert Hurkacz won 3 sets over Lorenzo Musetti. I feel like grass is going to take a bit of time for Musetti.
These extravagant one-handers.
Yeah.
They take a bit of time to get their short, stabby block returns going, don't they?
Maria Sakkari, 1-1 over Arantxa Rus. She is somebody that I don't particularly have a feel for how good she can be on grass. You'd think that her incredible leg strength, sort of Kerber-like, might help her, you know, keeping low. But
yeah, she's one of those players who is in a completely different realm to what she was in last time Wimbledon was played.
Exactly.
There's a lot of them.
Fascinating. The last result that I just wanted to highlight from today was Sebastian Korda beating Alex de Minaur 7-6 in the fourth. Now, obviously an upset on rankings and yes, an upset, but one that most people saw coming, or at least potentially coming.
I think certainly long term, I'm a massive Seb Korda believer. I think this kid can go far. I think he's got everything, really. That comes quicker than I expected. I thought de Minaur would win that, but I think on paper you can certainly could have made a very strong case for a Korda win, but the mind still goes back to me to the conversation we had about tournament wins right on the eve of Wimbledon and the problems that that might cause. Don't know whether there's any cause and effect there at all, but we do know that he played that Eastbourne event. He won it. It had been a disrupted week with all the rain. And then he's come here. He's got a rough draw and he's out. And that must hurt.
Mm. Peter Sebby Sebastian's dad is here with him.
Is he?
This fortnight, yeah.
Well, I hope we bump into him because he's a nice bloke. And he's had the most incredible couple of weeks, hasn't he? Because his daughter... Is it Nelly, daughter?
Yeah, Nelly won her first. Yeah, she won her first major and is going to be number one in the world.
And the other daughter, Jessica, is also a huge golf star.
She's in the top 10 and has won loads on the LPGA Tour already.
Just amazing.
They're real rock stars of that tour.
They're the family that that everybody hates on the street, aren't they? Right then, tomorrow's schedule. We have Novak Djokovic against Kevin Anderson first up on centre court. David mused over an upset prediction there earlier, but I think you were just having a moment.
In fairness, I think he was just reading out the order of play.
Right, okay. Katie Bolter against Aryna Sabalenka. Oscar Otte against Andy Murray rounds things off on centre. Then on number one court, we have Svitolina against Van Oytvank. Then Nick Kyrgios and Ugo Humbert to finish. Then it's Dan Evans and Dusan Lajovic. And then finally, Onstrabur Venus Williams. Court number two tomorrow, we'll finally get to see Bianca Andreescu.
Yes, there's still a lot of first round matches on the schedule.
A lot. The first three matches on court two are all first rounders. Cornet against Andreescu. Then Puy against Norrie, which is to finish. Puy took the first set on the tiebreak in that one. So they will come back to complete that match. Felix Auger-Aliassime and Thiago Monteiro. And then Świątek against Zvonareva and Kenin Brengel. Berrettini will play his first match.
I'm covering that, by the way.
On court number three.
I've just found out. And guess what else I'm covering?
Dan. Dialer Dan?
Correct.
Got to stop calling him Dan and remembering that it's Dialer Dan now.
No, the segment is called Dialer Dan. The name is Dan.
Nah. Will David say Dialer Dan on Five Live?
No, I won't.
Disappointing. Vadasco Dimitrov, Bencic, Juvan, Muguruza is on court number three. Goodness me, Monfils still hasn't finished his first round match. That started on Monday. Azarenka's on court 12. Liam Brody against Diego Schwartzman. Matt's sniffing an upset there. Not confidently, if his current facial expression is anything to go by. Goodness me, tomorrow is an absolute feast. It's a selection of first and second round. They've got such a backlog now that they have announced that the first and second rounds of the men's doubles competition will be best of three sets rather than best of five, because they just need to free up court space and time, basically. The good news is the forecast looks to be improving significantly from tomorrow. I think that's it for your day two. I'm sorry. I mean, look, it had its highs. It really did. But overall, a bit of a bum out of a day. So let's focus on the football and apologise to all of our German listeners.
We are watching it for the third, fourth time, maybe.
Yeah.
Just appears to be on some sort of loop.
It is.
Yeah. And isn't it great?
It's on a loop anyway, and then we've gone to plus one. Just to watch it again.
Yeah. Muller's about to miss an open goal again. Yeah. It's great. Yeah, so goodness me, that was a day at Wimbledon. We'll be back for more tomorrow, of course. We'll have a newsletter, as we do every day of the championships of every Grand Slam. So do subscribe to that. Follow us on Instagram. I'm in charge. Fun stuff's happening.
Doing a sterling job, I've got to say.
Yeah, and follow us on Twitter. Hannah's doing just a splendid job on Twitter.
Oh, she was amazing.
Amazing.
Tonight.
Absolutely, amazing.
Particularly covering the Serena Williams story, which was heartbreaking, obviously, and she got it. Oh, it's so interesting to watch.
We have our mascots. We're not performing particularly well for them, but they're hanging in there with us. I've got Zeus.
Come on.
David Scott Rogue.
Rogue has been in touch. And
well, I had Serena Williams winning the title, David.
Rogue's
so.
Had stern words.
Matt Scousel-Mousel. We ride again tomorrow, put it that way. Billie Jean has Billie Jean King, and she's never a letdown. We have our Wimbledon mascot, Mocha, owned by Lovely Dawn. Lovely Mocha and Lovely Dawn. We have our executive producer, Chris Albert Lee, and we have shout-outs.
For Leslie G,
right, Leslie.
As in G double E, like Gina G,
no,
or
as in the letter G.
Oh,
that's cool, isn't it? Huh?
That's all we've been given.
Like that,
like Jay Z.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Really cool. Right, Leslie. Thanks for your support.
Will Ford.
Right, Will.
Wilford or Will Ford.
Will Ford.
Like Gerald R. Ford, the President of the United States, from Vice President to President after the beneficiary of Nixon's impeachment.
Very much like that.
Yeah. Cheers, Will.
Thanks
for your support then.
And
well, not impeached. He wasn't impeached, was he? He resigned before. He resigned anyway.
Okay.
And Stephen Wright, who
hi, Stephen.
Who writes to us very often.
Appropriately. Hello, Stephen.
We've just had Ian Wright on the telly celebrating the last goal that just went in.
Oh, it's gone in again.
Another goal.
What do you know?
Gone in again.
Same scorer as well. Still 2-0.
Gets better every time. Right then.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for listening. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.